Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of November 3rd. A two-day ministerial dialogue took place at the United Nations General Assembly in New York last week to examine issues related to trade, aid, debt, investment, and finance. The dialogue was held to follow up on goals set 18 months ago at the International Conference on Financing for Development in Monterrey, Mexico. At Monterrey, participants struck an agreement including a commitment by wealthy nations to increase development aid and to remove trade barriers like agricultural subsidies and tariffs. The agreement also included a commitment by developing countries to improve governance and accountability and ushered in a new era of close coordination for global policy between the UN, World Bank, IMF, and WTO, who agreed to work towards the goals of the Monterrey Consensus in partnership with one another. 64 ministers participated in a plenary, roundtables, and interactive dialogues during last week's UN session, addressed not only by UN leaders, but by International Monetary Fund or IMF Director Horst Köhler and by the President of the World Bank, James Wolfensohn. Opening the dialogue, UN General Assembly President Julian Hunt of St. Lucia called for a realistic assessment of the progress that has been made on the Monterrey Accord. Hunt praised developing countries for holding up their side of the bargain. Quote, "For their part, many developing countries and countries with economies in transition are working towards the creation of an enabling environment at the national level by strengthening economic governance and enhancing democratic participation, as called for in the Monterrey Consensus," end quote. But Hunt questioned whether the UN or the Monterrey Consensus was having much impact on funding for development by rich countries. According to UN figures, development assistance grew by 4.8% last year and is expected to rise by a further 31% or $16 billion per year by 2006. However, this falls far short of the additional $50 billion per year that is needed to achieve UN poverty reduction goals. In 2000, the UN promised to usher in a kinder, friendlier millennium by cutting the number of people living on less than a dollar per day in half, ensuring that all people have access to clean water, and that all children have an elementary-level education by 2015. The Monterrey Consensus was seen as a step towards meeting these goals, but the results haven't materialized. In the year and a half since Monterrey, the world has experienced greater negative net flows of financial resources from developing to developed countries than ever before, leading one UN official to remark that the world may be in the midst of another lost decade, similar to the World Bank and IMF-funded debt crises that ripped apart Latin America in the 1980s. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan told last week's General Assembly that developing countries transferred $200 billion worth of financial resources to rich nations last year, the largest amount ever. Quote, "Funds should be moving from developed countries to developing countries, but these numbers tell us that the opposite is happening," end quote. In a world of 6 billion people, 1 billion own 80% of global wealth, while another billion struggle to survive on less than $1 per day. About half of the world's population lives on less than $2 a day and cannot meet basic expenditures for food, clothing, shelter, health, and education. At the heart of this worldwide inequality is the continued economic domination and exploitation of underdeveloped nations by the developed world, with U.S. trade, foreign, and military policy at the center of that system of domination. At the close of last week's UN meeting, IMF Managing Director Horst Köhler tried to convince the General Assembly that the key to reducing global poverty is to ensure more balanced economic growth among rich nations. Köhler said that the prospects for economic recovery among advanced economies have improved over the past year after a slump that began in September 2001. Köhler claimed that this is good news for poor nations, but failed to explain how that can be when so many developing countries are realizing record financial deficits and poverty. Köhler reiterated the remarks of Mexican Treasury Secretary Francisco Gil Diaz at the recent G20 summit, saying that dependence of the global economy on U.S. growth poses a major risk to international economic stability. Köhler blamed U.S. domination for the current imbalances in international finance and argued that correcting such imbalances in an orderly manner should be the primary objective of international economic policy. To this end, Köhler recommends an international effort aimed at strengthening economic growth in Europe and Japan. How this directed effort in increasing profits for Europe and Japan might serve the needs of developing nations or poor people around the world remains a bit of a mystery. World Bank President James Wolfensohn took a slightly more progressive line, urging UN members to close the yawning gap between spending on defense versus development. According to Wolfensohn, governments spent 14 times as much money on military defense as on international development aid last year, an imbalance that must be corrected if global poverty is to be alleviated. While $800 billion was spent on arms, about half of this by the U.S. alone, just $56 billion was put towards development aid. Wolfensohn noted that total development spending by governments around the world has been outstripped by remittances sent home to families and friends by migrant workers, which totaled an estimated $80 billion last year. According to a poll sponsored by the Inter-American Development Bank, money sent home to relatives from migrant workers in the U.S. will become Mexico's second highest source of income this year, reaching an expected $14.5 billion. Oil remains Mexico's most important source of income, but remittances, which outstrip direct foreign investment and tourism, are playing an increasingly significant role in the Mexican economy. The findings show a significant leap from the $9 billion in remittances reported 3 years ago and defy common expectations that tighter border security after September 11th, coupled with a shrinking U.S. economy, has stemmed the tide of non-status migrant workers entering the U.S. from Mexico. Nearly 500,000 people entered the U.S. illegally from Mexico last year, undeterred by the new risks associated with U.S. border security. They join an estimated 7 million illegal immigrants struggling for survival in the U.S. Non-status migrants tend to take on jobs with long hours, hard work, low wages, and no benefits, working as farm laborers, textile workers, janitors, or at odd jobs. Regardless of their immigration status, these workers contribute to the American economy through their underpaid labor and purchasing power. While illegal workers usually cannot pay taxes, neither can they qualify for government assistance or programs. In the late 1980s, U.S. immigration officials kept watch on employers who hired illegal workers. But since the late 1990s, enforcement of immigration laws inside the U.S. has almost disappeared. Once illegal immigrants make it to the U.S. undetected, they're unlikely to be followed to work. Under a 1986 federal law, employers can face civil or criminal charges if they knowingly hire illegal immigrants or fail to comply with certain employee record-keeping regulations. But employers do not have to verify a prospective worker's documents. Employers can also use contract firms for maintenance and other work, absolving themselves of responsibility for their subcontractors' hiring practices. The use of contract firms for cleaning and for other types of work has increased substantially in the U.S. since 1986, as employers have sought out ways to protect themselves from investigation or prosecution while keeping costs low. The 1986 law resulted in several high-profile roundups of immigrant workers, leading to work stoppages and lost income in certain industries like onion farming and meat packing. The U.S. government learned that illegal immigrant labor was useful for keeping the economy afloat, and workplace raids did not continue. In recent years, the number of corporations fined for immigration violations has plunged. In 1990, more than 14,000 American employers were fined for hiring illegal immigrants. By 1998, this number had dropped by half, and by 2000, only 178 businesses were charged with hiring illegal workers. All the while, the number of people entering the U.S. illegally has remained steady. And as the economy has fallen into a slump, U.S. companies have come to rely more heavily on low-wage, under-the-table labor. The facts shed light on U.S. government raids at Walmart 2 weeks ago, when U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials, under order from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, rounded up 250 illegal immigrants working as janitorial staff in Walmart stores in the U.S. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Bureau said the workers were hired by a contract cleaning firm and that Walmart executives knew about the recruitment of illegal immigrants by the contractor, but turned a blind eye to the practice. Federal agents seized a number of documents from Walmart's Bentonville, Arkansas headquarters, and federal grand jury subpoenas were issued for Walmart executives to testify. The raids, coined Operation Rollback, targeted workers at 61 Walmart stores in 21 states. Those arrested came from 18 different countries, but were primarily from Mexico and Eastern Europe. The workers were paid between $6 and $8 an hour to mop floors and clean toilets. Many of those arrested were coming off of night shifts at Walmart stores. They were taken into detention at local immigration offices. Those without a criminal record were released with instructions to appear before immigration judges. All of those arrested now face deportation for themselves and their families. A U.S. immigration press release stated that, quote, "These arrests are part of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement mission and part of our ongoing efforts to ensure that U.S. companies do not employ individuals who are unauthorized to work in the United States," end quote. But these so-called ongoing efforts are at an all-time low, and it is unlikely that the Walmart arrests will usher in a sweeping crackdown on non-status workers in the U.S. Rather, the high-profile sweep appears as a sort of media stunt aimed at convincing the public that the U.S. government is concerned about the effects of migrant labor on the U.S. economy. As diplomats and officials debate U.S. domination of the global economy at the UN and the G20, it is important to recognize that this dominance has been partially achieved through the exploitation of a millions-strong underclass of illegal workers who have been forced to leave their countries of origin, often due to the effects of U.S. foreign policy, and now find themselves struggling to make ends meet in a foreign land where they lack the benefits of citizenship and face racist or sexist discrimination. In response to the arrests of its contract cleaning staff, Walmart told reporters that the company is committed to cooperating with U.S. immigration officials and stressed that Walmart was not directly responsible for the behavior of its third-party contractors. The company has also begun an internal investigation and has vowed to fire anyone in its workforce who does not have proper immigration papers. Operation Rollback marks another stroke of bad news for Walmart, the world's biggest retailer and the largest single employer in the U.S. with more than a million workers across the country. The firm already faces a wave of lawsuits alleging sexual discrimination and has been criticized for union busting in the U.S. and Canada. Walmart's anti-union, penny-pinching policies have affected workers throughout North America's retail and manufacturing industries. Supermarkets such as Safeway have locked out unionized workers, slashed wages, and reduced benefits in the effort to remain competitive with Walmart. Many of Walmart's suppliers have shut down their North American factories and begun sourcing overseas to lower the cost of their products so that Walmart will stock them. Despite Walmart's nasty reputation, people keep shopping there. Last year, the company had sales of more than $244 billion. Observers say that the recent sweep of illegal immigrants contracted to clean Walmart's floors at night in the U.S. might temporarily hurt Walmart's image, but won't necessarily hurt the company's financial results. The only way to truly stick it to Walmart is to avoid it. Support community-based grocers, drugstores, and clothing shops instead. That's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.